Right.
Right. A quick summary of the last two sentences. Everybody's working in their own different settings and styles, and et cetera, and these notes, quite honestly, I would never ever dream of calling them a formal workshop on how to get started in private practice. I only know what I did, and other people have added to it as years have gone by. So that's what these notes are focusing on, really, on getting started. And where do we want to start from? Because, of course, you've first of all got two case studies to write, which would not necessarily be starting your practice, but there's no reason why you shouldn't be starting to put yourself about, except you haven't quite got a qualification to put it on with yet. So, I ought to get the notes out, oughtn't I? Have you had a bit of a read through already? Is it looking like it's helpful information?
It's
Or
very helpful. I've just ordered a used copy of the book that's referenced,
oh,
actually.
right, yes.
Yeah, because like at this stage, I will take every bit of help I can get.
Fair enough. Yes. Yes,
Yeah.
it's a neat little book that, and I don't know, I haven't even opened it. I'm not even sure if I still got it. I might have lent it to someone, who knows? But I did find that quite useful to put some things in. Yes, so I tell you what, first of all, we must get Patricia's, or not first of all necessarily, but we must in this session get Patricia's and Donna's experience of getting started and setting up and so on. But what could be very useful is for you, Bev, and you, Sebastian, just to think through, or Sebastian, not quite so. You seem to be looking at training before you were looking at autogenics. So what happened to you when you first made an inquiry to learn autogenic training for yourself? Can you remember back, Bev, in particular, too?
Yes, I wasn't inquiring first and foremost for autogenic training. I was looking for a particular type of psychotherapist. And in that, it took me to an article that
Right.
Alice had written on the Psychosynthesis website.
Yes,
And
yes.
so that intrigued me. And then when
Yeah.
I went to Alice's website, I saw that she taught autogenic training, and that's how I found out about it. Otherwise, I'd
Okay.
never have known that
Okay.
it was a thing. Yeah.
No, I mean this is part of our problem, is actually getting it known about. Okay. So when you got to that point and said, I'd like to learn this, what happened next?
Yeah, because I came with what I was presenting, and Alice, was very open and said, do you want to learn autogenic training first? Do you feel that now is the time that you'd like to do that? And I said yes in the affirmative. And then we scheduled an assessment meeting. So I was sent
Right.
through the form to fill in, and then we had a meeting
Yeah.
where I went,
And you
and we
went.
discussed that to make sure that autogenic was suitable.
Of course she did her assessment, and then of course you took it from there.
Yeah.
So actually we're going a step further back from that, because people are, well, say, I'll say at the hospital right now, we get a lot of referrals, and it's really because the doctors who work at that hospital run out of ideas when what they are presenting to their patients isn't really helping very much. So we get a lot of referrals for, oh, I'll be a bit rude here, and I don't mean it to sound rude, but for the lost causes, for the people who don't really know where to go next. So we get a lot of referrals. Nobody knows what autogenic training is, and they're just given an appointment and then they come along. Now, in private practice, it's different. We've got to have something going on the BAS website, and you can have your profile put on there, that sort of thing. But when somebody makes that first phone call, so Sebastian, you were looking at going into training, of course, thinking you had got our style of autogenics in there, which you didn't have.
So, to be honest with you, how did I get here? So, even I was looking even last year and 2 years ago on the website, and unfortunately, there is nothing updated. There is no information with regards of, the next teaching, let's say for new students when it'll come available. So, because 2 years ago, I wanted to go back home. And as I mentioned early on, I was in counseling and I used to teach psychology and I was considering a CBT, but being honest, back home, but that it's off the table now. So, but first of all, I said, I just want something in between, to, let's, for example, if I would like, let's say, to specialize in Eric Story and hypnotherapy, it's about 4 years or 5 years of formation, So some of the therapeutic approaches might take up to four years. So this is up to a year and it's quite simple. I mean, you don't need to pass a lot of exams and other supervisions, blah, 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 So it's quite simple. But on the other hand, I just wanted to learn it properly for myself,
Yourself
for my
first,
own
yes,
benefit.
right,
Because as I was saying, I was practicing with students, but it was wrong. It was completely different, completely different. And yeah, perhaps I have never heard about the LUT work, with Dolph Lomig exercise. So it completely a different version,
Of course.
So, and I became really intrigued and definitely I wanted, to get hold of someone and perhaps, to learn first for myself and then I'll see in private practice how it might work. Because
Okay.
du
So
during the
that's.
pandemic, a lot of, not only me, I have, a lot of friends and, people I work with, I mean, colleagues, they got really depressed because of the pandemic, and especially I had to, to spend at home for 2 weeks. That really knocked me mentally badly. So I think autogenics might have helped at that point.
Yes, indeed. And of course, the problem there is that just when people are in crisis and in difficulty and so on, that's not when they won't go looking for an autogenic training unless they already know about it. So again, that's a bit of our problem. We've got to try and get it out there more effectively than it already is. So thank you, Sebastian and Bev. So for both of you, you actually came an unusual route through, didn't you, to learning it for yourself. What we are thinking about here is, suppose, I don't know, or no, let's go to Donna and Patricia next. I mean, do you have a source of referral at all? How do people find you?
Sometimes word of mouth, sometimes through the website. And I used to rent rooms near where I live, and I had my leaflets in there. But I don't use them now. And in fact, I use Home or Zoom.
Right. So that means that possibility of referral has dried up because you're not leaving
Yeah,
your
but
leaflets there.
it wasn't very, because I'm not working like every day of the week or
No,
anything like
no,
that.
no,
You
no,
had
no.
to book in advance,
Yeah.
and all the bookings were booked up by people who had more work than me. So it wasn't working for me.
No, and that is part of what we're talking about is how we manage, what sort of style are we doing, and renting rooms is a good idea, but I rejected it in the end because you can't be consistent with autogenics. I might book it for 8 weeks for one client, but they don't want to quite they rent you the room for half a day, or so it never quite fitted. It never quite worked because it's so random. If I was a psychoanalyst, you can safely book every week for 3 years, but you can't do that with autogenic training. What about you, Donna?
I had the possibility of rooms, and I was going to go in with another counsellor. And she was really into autogenic. She was fascinated, and she offered. She's got a Chelmsford counselling centre, so I was going to sort of jump on her books. But I first went to her for supervision, and actually, I didn't like the way she worked. So I was thinking of coming out of that, and then we had COVID, so
Oh,
that blew that
and that was
away
the end of
anyway.
that.
So,
Yes, yes.
but I get mine is through word of mouth, a lot of it. Sometimes I'll get a counselling client that then I'll think, I think maybe autogenics would be better for you. So we'll discuss it. And I flick them over
Yes.
to that. So,
Yes. So it's a
yeah.
sort of turnover. Yes. That's very interesting. And when I was starting out, and I'm fascinated that both of you can get word of mouth. I very rarely do. And it seems so strange because people swear by all the positive things that we know and we hear about with autogenics. And I think that's some of the reason why maybe it's a personal thing, but why I don't get very many word of mouth is because people don't really like admitting that they have been. They don't like saying, I had depression or anxiety. They don't like talking about that to somebody. So even though they might recommend somebody else to come, they don't actually do it because it means saying, I saw that person. But of course, that's always a recommendation, which will be a good thing when it happens, of course. And it has happened occasionally over the years, I have to say. Okay.
Am I to share something, Jay? Sorry. Yes, Bev.
No, I was just going to add something, which was that several of my clients over the years have said, I'm sorry, I've got to stop now because, you know, and they had some reason that they couldn't stop. And they said, but I hope to come back in the future. And I kind of, you know, wished them well, et cetera, and thought, yeah, well, I'll never see them again. Mm-hmm. And it's surprising how many of them have. They were telling the truth. So when things for them got better, they contacted me again and said, oh, I don't know if you remember me, blah, blah, blah. And it's worked out really well because, you know, they really wanted it. They've come back. So
when you say come back, do you mean they completed the course in the first place or they had to leave it for other reasons?
They got so far through it and we discussed it and how far, and we started more or less from the beginning again, you know. Okay. But, okay. You know, they did actually want to come back, which was good.
Yeah. Oh, I've had a few like that, yes. But whether they've talked about it to anybody else and then recommended that person to come is a different thing. Yeah. Bev, you were going to say.
Yes, it's probably not as relevant now that we've just been talking about what Patricia shared. But I met with some friends yesterday and they know I'm doing this autogenic training course. And in that conversation, I was able to explain how I came across. It was actually, you know, I was having my own crises looking for psychotherapy and how the conversation opened up. It was almost like me talking about my own stuff gave other people permission. Mm-hmm. But the response when they asked me to explain what autogenic therapy was that made me smile and think about you, Jane, is she said to me, I could just do with some of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where the title of the book came from.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Just from that. Thank you for that. Yes. So where do we start? Well, I'm going to read through my own notes here that we were putting. You need, actually, what you are realizing now doing this training is how full of little pockets and areas and new bits and other bits to fit in and so on. With this, you need to be ready to teach AT. And I mean, just to be entirely practical, if you're going to start autogenic training to teach somebody and you haven't got any session sheets ready, you're going to be in deep trouble. So it really is worth having some kind of even a filing cabinet with those little hanging folders in to just have sets of stuff ready, or if not sets of stuff, at least week one, week two, week three, week four, and get yourself into a situation where at a moment's notice, you could take somebody on. And I can't say that highly enough because I've got so fed up over the years when this happens. I'm not saying it happens very often, but people do ring up and say, oh, I did my training. Well, you remember me, I'm Pam or whoever it is. I've got a client ring up and I'm not quite sure how much am I supposed to charge. And I don't know where my AT session sheets are. And I'm thinking, whoa, okay. If you're really serious about this, you will have got yourself sorted out and you really do need to have a lot of practical things in place so you can do it without hassle, because otherwise it's horrible to think, oh, she's in week four. What's week four? What have I got to do in week four? You know, you don't want to be thinking like that. You want to know exactly where all your sheets are, etc. I know it. I'm sounding like the grandmother. No, what is it? Teaching the grandmother to suck eggs? I probably am, but it's always worth saying. Always worth saying. Mm-hmm. So are you going to work at home? Or are you going to hire a room? And we're already touching on this a bit. Is this...
I'm considering from home.
Home. Yeah.
Yes. But I think e-marketing, social media you know, will be the first step to start, you know, to advertise. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, of course, Zoom is so common now. You have to be careful, of course, when you're teaching, as I think we've mentioned this, haven't we? Teaching AT on Zoom, it's very difficult to teach the postures. It's not easy to do that. You can only sort of guess and hope that you can see enough of the person. So have we talked about that before, about actually perhaps coming to have a meeting session, maybe a lengthy one? You would do the assessment, that's separate. That could be done on Zoom very easily. But then when you want to start teaching, bring them to your house or your home for session one and maybe session two as well, so that you've got quite a big chunk of time to work with the person, knowing that you're going to continue on Zoom. But when you've got the postures going and you've got and you've actually met them and kind of know who they are in person, that's a really good starting point. And I was beginning to do that before COVID, actually, and then beginning to do some more distance. And I remember there was one person who was going to move back to Sweden. She was a patient from the hospital. That's right. She'd waited so long and things had gone wrong with her first appointments. And when we finally met, she said she couldn't come and do the course because she had to move back to Sweden for all sorts of family and financial reasons. And I thought, this is really unfair. It wasn't her fault that the appointments got muddled up, et cetera, et cetera. So I offered to teach her, not by Zoom, but by telephone. So before she left England, she came to me from London, not far away. We had a good long session to meet up first, and then we did the rest of it by phone calls, and that was perfectly possible. Well, not ideal, but perfectly good. And obviously she's an NHS person, so I made that as my decision that I would teach her. I couldn't teach her in the hospital because she couldn't come. And so I didn't charge her, of course. I just, you know, that was how that worked out. And so that I was very glad to be able to do it, actually. So that's one story, and I probably never do it like that again. Don't know.
Jane, and I'm Donna and Patricia, what are your views on teaching AT exclusively on Zoom? And it's not that that's kind of, I'd always thought that I would only ever teach it in person, but I thought that's something I'm really curious to hear what your thoughts are. Is it possible? Mm. So say, for example, somebody who lived in Scotland wanted to learn with me and for whatever reason couldn't travel for initial couple of sessions, you know, would it work? Do you think
it works perfectly well? Yeah. Because, of course, we were forced to do that at the hospital.
Yeah.
In the end, in COVID, we did absolutely everything on Zoom. It was a telephone consultation for the assessment very often. Yes, that's usually how it went. And then when we were doing the Zoom groups, they set us up at the hospital to be able to do that. And it is possible. The only thing is the postures, but we were able to, I think you've got it, the video, the posture video, that dreadful video. We'll have to do some better ones. But at least they were one take things that were done on the very last day before lockdown. So, you know, they were done in a rush. So they served their purpose. And
Jane,
I
thought your videos were brilliant, by the way.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I really did. And I hear when we talked about it, you know, I think, you know, it would be great if I could get some videos myself for the purpose. You know, your videos are a great example, certainly in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And of course, my good colleague who Donna knows, Stephen, or maybe Patricia knows Stephen as well. And he said, one take. He said, how did you do that? And I said, well, of course it was one take. I've only done what I've been doing for the last 30-odd years. It jolly well ought to have been one take. But so what I have learned in demonstrating them in the room is always to talk through exactly what I'm doing. So if you make the video the same thing, now you can see that I'm sitting on the edge of the seat. So, of course, you can't see properly, but now I'm sitting on the edge of the seat and I'm sitting up straight. And as I let the blood, now you can see that I'm slumping. And now that I'm doing this, I'm hanging loose and so on. So as long as you're saying the words while you do it, it helps the person to understand. Mm. That's just a little clue for when somebody's busy filming you. Okay.
Are there any other considerations of how you would train differently on Zoom other than, say, taking special care for the postures?
That's the biggest consideration. The other thing is that it's not always so easy to tell how someone is thinking. Well, what we're thinking about here is perhaps body language. You don't see very much body language on Zoom. You only see the face. And sometimes I've missed clues on the face when someone has actually been quite upset. In fact, I had a refresher session with someone recently and he was, when we were just talking about some things that weren't particularly, he got a new job, you know, we were quite, quite matter of fact about stuff. And then suddenly his face went like this. And I thought, oh my God, he's suddenly very upset about something. and then he smiled and carried on talking normally. And I thought, oh, it was a yawn. He was stifling a yawn. That was what was so funny. He wasn't on the verge of tears at all. So that was quite odd. So those sorts of things happen. And I think it wouldn't have been quite so odd if we'd been in the same room together. He probably would have yawned. He probably didn't realise that he was making that face while he was stifling his yawn. But anyway, so that's a curious thing. So I think those things you miss. But otherwise, don't know, Donna and Patricia, what do you find? Otherwise, it's fairly...
I was pleasantly surprised, actually, because I never worked over Zoom for counselling or AT or anything. And then we had COVID, obviously.
Yeah.
And I expected my ongoing clients, because I'd met them. So I expected us to have that connection over Zoom, obviously, because we'd already made the connection. But then I started taking on new people that I have never met in person for counselling, mainly more than AT. But I was really surprised at how well it worked and that I could pick up what was going on with them. So I suppose that gave me more confidence.
Yes.
That yes. It can work really well.
Yeah.
And it converted me. I was like, no, I have to be in the room. No, want to be in the room.
Yeah.
And now I'm, it would work over Zoom.
And I was exactly the same. And it was COVID who changed all that. Mm. So, yeah. Patricia?
I had used Zoom before we had lockdown and everything. And if I'm someone's inquiring and they're from sort of my area or that kind of thing, I tell them, and I say that I will work with Zoom, but I would like, at the very least, the first session, we should meet face to face.
Which is what we're talking about, yes. Mm.
And I'm quite happy with it, with Zoom now, because I've used it so much and it's so useful. I mean, I've had clients in New York, in Colorado, in Madrid, in all over Athens. I mean, I don't know. I thought, my God, I've gone international. I mean, that was just and it was not, I wasn't putting myself there. Some of it came through word of mouth, people that I'd spoken to abroad, and they recommended a friend contact me.
Yeah.
It made it just that bit more interesting as well, knowing, that you were working with people and there were sort of differences, because you're in a different country. So I'm very comfortable with that way of working and I happily work face to face as well. I like face to face.
Yes. I think I would always prefer face to face, but like you and Donna as well, I mean, I am converted to Zoom, which makes life much more possible. Different places, different everything else. Yes.
Regarding the posture.
Anyway, you must go on.
Can I just explain about the postures? I found if I'd move my chair away from the screen and put it, I've got a big screen computer as well, and I use that. So if I move far enough away, I can demonstrate it myself.
Of course. Yeah. I'm in a tiny office here, so I can't. And I don't do laptops. So we're all different with where we are, but we can, if you can do it, that's absolutely brilliant, of course. And we need the space. Yes. Yes.
Before we move on from this topic, can I just ask, that was so helpful how you explained, like, when we're kind of fully fledged practitioners for autogenic training, but, with regard to the case study, is the requirement that we do those in person, or can we do one in person, one on Zoom? What are your thoughts?
That's an interesting one. We haven't actually thought that through. And I'm going to say, I think you can do whatever you can get. I think, what do you feel about that? I think we would still prefer in person. I think anybody would. But I wouldn't turn down a Zoom one if that's all you could manage for whatever reason. What do you think, Donna?
I think it would be nice to have an experience in person if you can have it, because I think it's a quicker connection.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the same room with somebody rather than Zoom, mm-hmm. it might have to be a couple of times or something. Mm-hmm. So ideally, it would be great if you could do all of it face to face. But I also understand. Mm-hmm. I think we've got to realise that not everybody is in that situation. You might not be able to find anyone face to face. So I think we're going to have to be flexible.
Quite agree.
With it.
Yeah. Yes.
But I just think for you to get the best, to experience the best sessions, I think it would be face to face still.
Yeah.
Personally, that's what I would enjoy better.
Yeah. And what is your, sorry, Sebastian, do you have a question? Because
No, I'm listening. I'm listening. It's a very interesting topic.
Yeah. In terms of the number of clients, so I know for this course, we're required to do case studies and to do work with one client initially in supervision before we move on to the second client later on in the year. What if we're inundated, if that could ever happen, and there's people that want to work with us while we're still training? What are your guidelines on kind of, you know, the number of people we can work with concurrently? You know, do you have some guidance on that?
Well, there's two answers to that. One is it would be quite rare, I think, which is probably why we don't have any guidance. But if we did, I would never quarrel with anybody wanting to do more than their two. That's absolutely fine. Just make sure you have supervision.
Yeah.
And that's the responsible thing to do, if you are explaining to someone that you should actually explain that you're still in training. But that doesn't stop you teaching AT and you have supervision, and that would be fine.
Okay.
Great. I mean, in fact, the more experience you get, the better.
Mm.
The faster you learn, the more proficient and confident you get. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Sebastian?
And I'm just curious, how is the supervision going to work out? Do we have to record our sessions?
That's a very good, okay, lovely question. Are we doing that tomorrow? I thought this was
allocating supervision.
Oh, the supervision, yes. But you're not saying, we're not doing that at the moment. No. Sorry. Yes. Thank you, Donna. The supervision will be arranged between you and your supervisor, of course, and you do not have to meet for every single session. You would certainly meet after the assessment. As for recording, we wouldn't ask for it, but if you felt that you would like to record, then you would have to get your client's permission to do that as well, and assure them that this goes absolutely nowhere except to your trainers. Okay, and then, but if they don't want you to do that, then you'll have to agree with that and not do it. So you would have your own notes to work from, take it to the supervisor, discuss the client, any thoughts you've got about their stories, and however, having said all of that, it sounds like we've got to anticipate what their process is going to be. from the assessment. We can't do that. You know that now already, don't you? This process is so spontaneous that all you can do really is give an impression of how you found that person. The supervisor might say, well, given that they had this happen and that happen, there might be some anger lurking about. But again, it's only information, and you don't do anything with that information except be aware of it. And of course, when you're going to be teaching the offloading exercises anyway, it doesn't really matter even if you've forgotten that information. We don't have to be too precise either in our expectations or anticipations. In fact, don't be precise at all, but be very precise how you teach it. And then, so that moves things on. Having met your supervisor after the assessment of your client, then you would start working with the client. That could be, I don't know, the same month or something like that. And you'll have hopefully weekly sessions, okay, going through and carefully working out when is it good to have a break. If your client says they're going on holiday, you need to be thinking, oh, yes, I don't want to leave them on the warmth exercise. Oh, but I can give them the hold exercise. That's all right. So you need to discuss a few of those fine tuning points with your supervisor, probably. But it's very good to make that plan before you start. And then the supervisor will guide you. You are going to have 8 hours of supervision individually. So you could divide those up, 4 for your first client and 4 for your second client, for example. So, so have one after the assessment. Maybe teach them a couple of sessions and then go for supervision again quite early on in the course, just to chat things through, how things are going, what is going on, get a little bit of guidance, whatever that might be. And it might be another 3 weeks, 4 weeks maybe, depending on how things are going, when you have your next supervision session. So we're not asking to have absolute recordings every single week. I'll tell you why we're not, because we never have. And I think there's no reason why we should suddenly make this far more onerous. If you've got to record everything, that's quite a lot to do. You'd have to play it back. You've got to make a transcript if you're going to transfer bits into your case study. Actually, in the real world, when you're working with a client as a fully fledged practitioner, you're not going to do recordings. You're going to remember after each session what has transpired, what they were talking about, what your thoughts were, what their thoughts were, and what you taught. And there you've got your session all ready for your case study. And that is no more or no different to how you will be when you're a fully fledged therapist. I might be alarming you by saying there's actually not very much.
No, I'm visualizing or seeing myself with a notepad making single word notes as I go through as a reminder to what I need to transcribe for a case study, just to make sure I don't forget it. Because I think when the nerves are there, especially for the first client, it's amazing how my brain forgets things. So, yeah, any help in that respect is good. And
I'm also going to say that you will always remember your first client.
Yeah.
You'll remember an enormous amount your first client. All the others will fade into insignificance. And, of course, the discipline with counselling is not to write things during the session, because you are fully engaged with that person and it's a bit distracting. However, I'm all in favour of what you've just said. You could always say to the client, they will know maybe that they are your first guinea pig, as it were. And you could say, forgive me if you just see me jotting down a word or two, it's just to remind me that I've covered everything. And that would be perfectly all right. They would be, and in fact, I do remember somebody saying to me once, you take such care. I love seeing you writing things down. It shows you're really taking notice, and I'm really grateful for it. So, you know, it's not like a GP sort of writing everything down and not taking any notice. You're actually doing both. So I think, I don't know about you, Donna, would that be completely against your principles to write anything down?
I tried, because when I did my first group at the hospital, I did think I'm going to need to write something down, and I tried. And I can't. I cannot write and listen at the same time. And like you say, it's probably my training, because if I'm completely listening to somebody, I cannot do something else. So I don't make notes, but I do remember the important things, even if it's not initially, like I'll walk out with a head full of stuff. But as I then come back to write my notes, I do remember where I am. And it's like that all the time. And the important stuff always does come up. So I tend not to make notes, but that's me and my.
No, I absolutely agree. And I'll come in there, because that's what I always used to do. And I have to admit now that because of age, I'm not so good at remembering. So that's why I do it. And I only do it at the hospital. I don't do it in my private practice, where it's just one person. So you probably, and Donna's absolutely right, when you come to sit and, you know, it all comes back. Oh, yes. And then she said so and so. And you don't have to write it verbatim. That's not what we're looking at all. It's just the general, how are they getting on, their feedback, how much practice they did or didn't do, and what did you say about it? And, you know, just the general feel of how it's all gone. So that probably not writing during is the right answer. But I think I'm more easygoing with myself, because my patients simply don't mind. And therefore, why not? You can say, I'm just doing one word here so that I know I catch things. Yeah. This is fine. It shows you're paying attention in a different style. And of course, I think what you were saying, Donna, you can't listen and write at the same time. And that's actually not what I'm doing. I am listening very carefully. And then jot down very quickly what they've just said before I move on to the next person. So it's not quite taking, you know, like verbatim notes or anything like that at all.
No, of course not.
So there we go. Have you got something there, Patricia, on that?
Well, I've never taken long notes. Usually I remember, but I do often put down maybe even a single word, because I know it's code for me for that, when we talked about da da da, you know, whatever it was, or just very quick bullet points occasionally. But I don't spend a lot of time.
No. And some people don't even keep client notes. I always do, because I'm always sort of slightly bothered that if somebody ever had any kind of consideration, I think we ought to have a record of what happened during the autogenic course. But I do know of some of our colleagues who don't make notes unless something significant has happened, which is quite a reasonable, you know, if they're coasting along perfectly happy without any sort of difficulties with warmth or heartbeat or with any of these, there's really nothing to say. You can just bracket three or four sessions together and say, coasting along very nicely. Mm-hmm. Deep relaxation at times, something very insignificant. For your case study, yes, we wanted a bit more meaty than that, just to make sure you're not teaching forehead coolly week one. Okay. Oh, we're going a little bit way off. It doesn't matter. It's all useful. Everything's useful. But I'm going back to the beginning, though. I used to get a phone call. Okay, I'll tell it slightly humorously. An inquiry for autogenics very often came when I was in the middle of cooking dinner. So the phone call would go like this. The phone would ring. Then I would hear the voice at this end say, hello. And then I would go, you need to speak to my mum. So that was my teenage son answering the phone, thinking it was going to be one of his mates. And of course, it's an inquiry for autogenics, somebody quite nervous at the other end. So they would quickly say a problem. And then I would damn and blast because I was in the middle of cooking dinner. I'd rather not have taken that phone call at that moment. So that was the thing for me. We soon got a separate phone line because that was the best way to organize. Of course, mobiles made all the difference. But at the time, we got a second phone line. Then in talking to the person, I'm saying hello, and they want to inquire about autogenics. And so the first thing I say to them on the phone is, thank you for ringing, and I'm not going to expect a decision about whether you go ahead with this until I have sent you my information pack. So please don't feel that you've got to be pressurized into anything. So then they tell me a bit about themselves. There's usually something about sleep or, I don't know, anxiety or whatever else, migraine headaches. I've heard that autogenic training can be useful. So then in brief, I say, yes, well, I would do a 9-week course. We would need to meet for a chat before we started. There's a refresher at the end. It's 11 sessions altogether. I don't mention money unless they ask me. Otherwise, the information I send them has got all that information in a neat little place. And I've got a leaflet and I've got 2 articles of autogenic training I send out. So all of that goes out in a pack afterwards through the post, actually, although nowadays I email it. Sometimes when I've talked a bit about it, and I say I always honest, never make any promises. That's the nature of autogenics, but it does help the autonomic nervous system and our stress reactions. And that might be all I say. And that usually presses a button or two with the listeners. And that sounds interesting. Okay. So very often the conversation ends there when I've taken their details and I've sent out the pack, and then I say, give me a call or drop me an email if you'd like to take things further. So that's that bit. On the other hand, the conversation, yes, Bev?
It might be appropriate for you to finish, but one of my questions was, is there any support we can have in putting our own information together? So what kind of articles do you send? Because I've got the ones that Alice sent to me.
Okay. I'll send you a bundle of articles and you can see what you want.
Yeah. And also, you know, one of the things I'm working on is like my own flyer, kind of my information saying in my own words, you know, what autogenic therapy is and what the course is. But got any examples, and Donna and Patricia, have you got anything that you can share with us that might help prompt how we want to structure our own?
I might have some still that I had printed when I was renting rooms, because they had a rack and I would put my stuff in there, but I haven't used them for a long time. Those kind of things, like little flyers and or something you even, maybe some people put things through letterboxes.
Yeah.
It's not too much, you know, not like loads and loads and loads of information. Keep it, you know.
Keep it into bullet point. That's more about marketing, isn't it, which is a different topic. But I do, I mean, we won't go into whether you write three pages of A4. But yes, bullet points and simple. It's useful, but we've all got stuff that we can give you, but you could also be deluged. And I think we should all have our own, you would realize this, Bev, your own
personality,
feel for what you're doing.
Yeah.
And write a bit about yourself, but also about the method. And it's the method you're selling, but we also have to sell ourselves a little bit. So, but we can certainly help. Yes. I remember I gave my brochure to, for this very reason, one of our students, and they pinched just about everything that I had written, which I didn't mind at all. I don't mind sharing my stuff. I really don't. But when I then saw it on their own brochure later, I thought, ooh.
Yeah.
And yes, I think they'd gone a bit too far. We did have a little conversation about it. But so anyway, but yes, I think what you can do is pinch. I say pinch. I don't mean that at all. I mean, when you sort of read something in an article, you think, ah, they've put something so well there. And you could take that sentence, maybe rearrange it so it's not plagiarism. Or if you do want to make a direct quote, put it in quotes and the reference and where the article was. So yes, you can do things like that. Of course you can.
It's okay. Worth having business cards printed in time as well, because sometimes you're in conversation with people and they say, oh, have you got a card? And that's very useful to have a card on you that you can give to someone if they're interested.
Yeah, I've got hundreds of cards sitting in my cupboard being forgotten. I don't use them anymore.
Yeah, but
because what you say to people now is, you look, Google me, or, well, you by name, maybe not, but Google Autogenics. Autogenic Society. So I'm saying don't spend unnecessary money. I suppose I'm saying that. But now you can get cards done very cheaply, can't you?
Mm.
Yeah. So anyway, the conversation might end at that point where they're going to read the stuff and then get back to me. On the other hand, they very often say, actually, can I make an appointment to come and see you? And so it's at that point that I say, yes, that is the starting point. This is when we have our first appointment consultation, and that is accompanied by quite a detailed questionnaire. And we need that because autogenic training is a therapeutic process which encompasses all kinds of different aspects of life. The life questionnaire, do you remember that? Yes, wonderful name for it. So I will enclose that questionnaire, therefore, in the pack that I'm going to send you. And yes, we can make a date. Let's find something for about a week's time. They might not know, of course, what the costs are going to be at that point. So again, that would be what they would probably ask you about. And then, of course, if they ask you, then you say what it's going to be. That's another little topic we can come to. So that might be the first phone call, which is why I never want to do it when I'm cooking dinner. Okay, because it's an important one. Donna, have you got anything to add or quarrel with?
No, not quarrelling. obviously, I mean, I don't know if anyone's got a second phone line. I don't know if anyone's got a first phone line these days. But the beauty of mobiles is if you don't recognise the number, you can not answer it and leave a nice message, you know, in case you are in the middle of dinner or running down the street or whatever you're doing. So there's always that you can do now. Obviously, it's common sense, isn't it, really? But
yes, it is. It is. And I'm talking 30 years ago, for goodness sake. An awful lot's changed since then. I get most inquiries through email, which is very convenient.
Mm. Which you can answer as and when, can't you, with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm.
Okay. So, but I've been disappointed over the years of how people have not sent out information. And I think that's really important. People don't know what autogenic training is. And then somebody will, I do remember a student, well, it wasn't a student, she was fully qualified this year, obviously hadn't done much about getting going, and fair enough. So she was asking me what she should charge because she didn't know what to tell the client. Now that's very unsettling, because if you get somebody saying, on the end of the phone, that's not very nice for an inquirer. Mm. So everything does need to be sorted out and organised and so on. So so that's that side of things. Now, I'm going back to the first page of these notes that I sent through. Practitioner insurance is actually quite important. And it's very clear on there. I recommend a particular company called Holistic Insurance Services. They are by far the cheapest, and for think it's £65. I'm a regular customer and I pay a bit less than that. And I think for new people, it's just a little bit more. So 65 is probably about the right amount. But you're insured for £5 million. It's absolutely extraordinary. So we are obviously a very safe risk. Can you be a safe risk? Is that all right? Hello, Sebastian.
Sorry, I have just one quick question. Okay, so let's say we get the insurance, and like Patricia was saying early on, let's say if we work with clients from another country, are we still covered by this insurance? I mean, if you work with people from other countries, if our clients are based in other countries?
I think the problem No, that's a very, very good question, because I'm not sure, and I should get that straightened out. I haven't talked to anybody in another country, so it hasn't been an issue. And I might not even have thought of asking the question, because I'm just so used to just carrying on teaching AT. What we have found is that students from other countries have found it more difficult to get insurance there, but that's a different issue. What you are talking about is if somebody from France wants to learn autogenics with me, am I covered for that person in France? I would have thought it would be, but you'd need to check it out. And I think whoever you insure yourself with, a question like that needs to be a direct question from you to your insurance company.
And whether they cover Zoom as well, if you're intending.
Yeah, and Zoom, yes, that's
or
right.
In your own premises.
Yeah.
However your setup is going to be, it's a question to go to the insurer with, just to make sure you're covered on all bases.
Do you know, thank you, Donna. I must check my policy and see if I am covered for Zoom. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not, I better ring them, hadn't I? I expect I am.
But, and home insurance as well, I think you need to put that on if you're working from home.
Yeah. Yes. And that's the 5 million indemnity does cover me for if they've slipped on the ice on my drive and broken their leg. So it's nothing to do with AT. It's just a set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. But because I'm working from home, I need that professional indemnity. It is. Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that either. I've just been working with my people abroad and thinking how great it was. I haven't thought, oh my God, I can't see why. I mean, surely if you're doing a Zoom session with somebody in France, what difference is it doing it here?
I agree.
No, but you're right. I have gone back to, I'm with Holistic as well. And I have gone back with them when it changed, when I was doing something, I was doing my own work and then I was doing something with the university as well as a consultant, and they sorted that all out in no time and charged me no extra fee for it, which really impressed me. And
they're
I've got a 5 million cover as well. And I've been, you told me about Holistic, and they're great. Yeah.
Well, how did I hear about them? Because somebody else told me about them. This is called word of mouth, isn't it? Right.
Yeah, I think most of them have jumped on the bandwagon now, but I know when COVID started, lots of people weren't covered for Zoom. Their insurances, there was a big thing about making sure your insurance is, you are covered for what you're doing, because people were doing it, you know, from home, Zoom and what have you. Yeah. So it's just to keep you safe. So once you know your setup, you can go to whichever insurance company and say, right, this is what I'm doing.
Can you
cover me for it?
Very good point. Yes. Thank you. That's completely right. Yes. And I'm remembering the woman who was in Sweden, and I was working with her on the phone. It never occurred to me that might not be covered. Yes. Okay. We're all learning. Yes, Beth.
Yeah. I wondered if you could give me and us an idea of charging scale. For example, the first question I have is, you know, in my mind, I assume that I wouldn't be charging as a training person, as a trainee, that would be for free. But I know that came up in a previous session. And I think you talked, Jane, about value, that when people pay for things, they tend to value it more. So I've got that question over my mind of actually, do I put a nominal charge on it when I'm training? And the second one then is take a Zoom session once I've qualified, if that happens, if I pass. You know, because you've not got London weighting of prices and so on, you know, what is a typical rate? Is it based on experience? You know, I don't really have any experience practicing, so that's new to me. And also I thought that I might look at rooms, and I wondered, for those of you that have already done those inquiries over the years, just how much were you being charged for a room, just off, you know, a ballpark figure, if you've got that information to hand?
Aries, the last time I was doing it, which was a few years ago, I was paying £15 a session, which obviously you've got to pass on to the client. I mean, that's one other thing. If you've got somewhere at home that you can use, it makes a big difference, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are figures, because I don't know if you remember, Jane, we did I did a survey years ago for members, and one of the things was, it was anonymous, but we asked how much people were charging, and it varied enormously. So there isn't, you can't say, oh, usually it's this amount, Bev. It's really up to the therapist to make.
But is there like a starting threshold? For example, there's a minimum everyone will charge, because I know, you know, in some parts you cannot, there is a basic, a minimum threshold, or it doesn't matter, everyone gets set, you know, can set their own fare.
We've never done that. I mean, I don't know what the counselling world is like on that one, but what I have always said for many years now for us is it's going to vary according, like you mentioned, London waiting, Bev. It's going to vary according to where you live. So if you did a little bit of local research, if it's possible, to find out what local counsellors or psychotherapists' hourly rate is,
yeah,
and charge something along those lines.
And if with students, for instance, that would make a difference to me. If I was charging a student, I think I'd try and charge them less.
Absolutely. So it's going to be a sliding scale sometimes. I mean, sometimes I help people who might be on benefits. And do you know what? I soon stopped doing that. I'll never forget, there was one occasion when I had somebody who really, you know, yes, okay, she had benefits and everything else, and she couldn't manage the fee and whatever it was. So I said, well, let's do it for half price then, and obviously, you know, do installments when you can afford it and blah, 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 blah. And then I was absolutely shocked. 2 or 3 weeks into the course, she couldn't come the following week, and she thought she might not be able to come for the next week either, because she was going to be on holiday to their second home in whichever country it was. And I thought, I don't have a second home anywhere. I'm not even going on holiday. You know, what's this? I'm the one who said, have I been a mug? So I actually was quite stringent after that and decided I wasn't going to do any reductions for anybody. If they want it enough, they will find the money. It's not that I'm overcharging, I think. I'll tell you what I charge now, and I've kept it at the same rate as since 2019, and that is £60 per session, which I know of counsellors who work for less than that. I know of counsellors who work for an awful lot more than that. So I think, well, that's somewhere in the middle. So, hey, that's all right by me. So it's, it is a personal thing. And yes, it will have varied hugely. And I don't really think we should undercharge, you know, because it's your training, for example, you're quite right. It's not sort of 4 years and loads of, this is Sebastian, isn't it? You were saying this, and a load of hoops to jump through and all the rest of it. We are fairly simple in the Autogenic Society, but it doesn't mean that what we do doesn't have value. And then it should be valued. When we were having this conversation before, did I mention I taught a 16-year-old? 16-year-old, yes, he had never. So, and I thought, is she going to value this or not? I wasn't sure. So we had the conversation, and at the end, yes, she gave something to charity.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it was, but her mum told me that she had given quite a healthy donation, because she had finished her school year and she was doing a bit of a summer work, and she'd saved up and given something. And I said, I'm so delighted to hear that. Yeah. Yes, Sebastian.
It's me again. So would you be kind to explain us how exactly is this insurance going to work out? I mean, you having a very vast experience over 40 years, if I'm not mistaken. Has it ever happened, like, to have a client that wasn't satisfied, or, I don't know, he had difficulties and he wanted to sue you, so they made a claim against you? So how exactly is it working out? Would you be kind to explain?
Cause I have to say I don't know, because it's never happened.
So this is just, I mean, to be on the safe side.
Yes,
to be...
I mean, Yes, we should have practitioner insurance. I think everybody working.
I was just curious whether it happened during your practice, maybe someone not to be happy, or they've been passing through a hard time. And
well, look, if they've gone through a hard time, I have never made any promises. And this is our great thing. We cannot make an outcome promise. We just can't. So we are perfectly upfront and honest about that right at the start. So if anybody has had difficulties, I'm sorry to speak like this, but they don't have a leg to stand on if they want to make a complaint, because we don't give a promise. We don't know. We do our best to encourage and see how things have, you know, how they can get on, or we might offer them another session, or we might offer them to come back later, which happened for you, Patricia, when somebody came back and finished. People have complained personally to me and said Autogenics has done nothing for them. And I have found that a great shame. Actually, I'm sounding dreadful now, but it's them. They're not able, for whatever reason, to engage with it. Mm. And so they are left a bit high and dry. Mm. And that is something, of course, that we have to understand as practitioners. But so do the clients understand it. They might not, you know, and I'm perfectly upfront sometimes and say, this must be really frustrating for you. You could do some offloading and put me in the chair if that's how you're feeling about it. You know, why not? Because you might as well use some of the techniques you've learned to give vent to your frustration that you feel you've got nothing from it. I mean, I will egg it to the last degree to try and put, to try and help them to get into something. But nobody has ever made a complaint.
What about kind of, you know, professional conduct and ethics? So, for example, if somebody had a complaint about me being unethical as a practitioner, where would that person get information on to raise a complaint? And I'm thinking kind of, I guess, with my counselling hat on, that they can go to the BACP if I were registered with them. In this case, is it a similar setup with the BAS at all?
Well, that's an extremely good question. And I think it is actually not quite set up. We do have a complaints procedure, but hasn't it, Donna, been on the agenda for updating for quite some time?
It has been. And we are in the process of having our members registered now, aren't we? So yeah, it will be. Okay, so yes, you could get reported to us in the near future. Yes. Not that that will happen, I think it's important if we're offering a service, there is a professional body behind us.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think we have.
We've got a complaints procedure which does need updating, but actually its focus is on the code of ethics and the organisation within, so how we're treating each other, more than an outside person coming to us to complain about one of us. It has happened, actually, come to think of it. There was a complaint not that long ago. Can't remember the details because I wasn't a trustee at the time. But there was something, but it was dealt with by a correspondence and just examining what went on and how it happened, and then having to whatever the complaint was about, was if it wasn't about Autogenics and it was about the practitioner, then there must have been some kind of disciplinary or something or other. Mm. I don't know. Can you remember much about that, Donna, or was it before your time?
I think it was before my time. I can't
remember anything. Yeah, I think so.
It is something we need to get into place properly. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm thinking of it from the client's point of view as well. You know, it's safeguarding the client, isn't it? It's letting them know that, you know, that yes, I'm fully insured, that yes, I adhere to a code of ethics, the course that I went on was accredited by the BAS. And should you have a complaint, kind of this is the route to go. Yeah.
I wouldn't give any of that information to the client.
I want to know it in my head.
In your head, they do, that's fine. I've never been asked those things. Sorry, Donna.
Yeah, no, I think some people now, they do want to know, because there's so many people giving out services left, right and centre, that they want to know, actually, are you a proper therapist or are you just somebody doing autogenics? Do you know what you're doing? So if we had that register properly, which we're working on, and we covered our, it's just to cover our therapists, and I don't think we've, they need looking after as well as, you know, as students. And so I think that's, it will be there soon, hopefully, Bev.
And I think with that, then, all the other information will be kind of generic and attached to that. That if you've been trained by the BAS and so on, you've got this standard of and so on. And this is, sorry, what am I saying? Oh, it was in my head just now. Never mind. It'll come back to me in just a second, if it has to. I wouldn't immediately tell a client, oh, I've done my training here and I've done this and I'm covered for that and I've got insurance and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to assume that the client is going to assume that. If they ask me, that's a completely different thing, of course.
I think, you know, it's enough, I feel, you know, to tell them about confidentiality and all that sort of thing and, you know, their safety, my safety, you know, that possibly, but we don't need to sort of encourage them to look to sue us or something.
To look, no, exactly. I quite agree with that.
No,
yes.
I don't think people see it as that now. It is that we're trustworthy and that we are reputable. It's like we're the gold standard of autogenics. And if you aren't, because I know people, if you want a counsellor, you can have a counsellor. There's no law against it. But if I was saying, I'd want them to be under a recognised body, because then everyone's protected and they know I'm trained to a specific standard, which we need BAS to be at.
Yeah, I'm wholeheartedly behind that, Donna. Yeah, because it's too easy for people to call themselves things like psychotherapists because it's not regulated without having done any training whatsoever, and then find themselves with a vulnerable client and they're doing more damage. So, you know, it's always with the client in mind. I think about this, you know, obviously I take care of myself too, but, you know.
Of course. And BAS, we need to look after BAS as well, because if autogenics gets a bad name because there are some dodgy, you know, therapists out there, they're not part of us.
Yeah.
So, and then we can prove who is, who's been trained by us, and then they're not part of us. It'll be a lot easier to distinguish.
Being honest, I just noticed there are a couple of therapists, they're not registered with, you know, BAS, but actually they do provide, what is his name, autogenics. They do offer this therapeutic approach. So,
unfortunately, there are several people out there calling themselves therapists who haven't, you know, qualified for anything. I always had clients who've been going to move well away from London, and they want to carry on, and they ask my advice about getting someone, and I say, make sure you have somebody who's really qualified. Don't just, you know, I hope you find somebody that's right for you, but please just don't take someone that just tells you. Make sure, because it's just too easy to do that, isn't it? To just...
Well, we can say it very confidently about autogenics. Find someone on the BAS website and don't look at for counselling and other things. Of course, we can't be so certain.
No, I make sure that they find someone on the list. Well, that's my advice. I don't know what they do. But it is easy for someone to be not qualified, just put stuff up there. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's important.
Okay, this is turning into a general discussion, isn't it? Which is great. I think lots of good questions are coming up. What are we doing? You are already, of course, talking about autogenics to your nearest and dearest and friends and colleagues. Bev, you have said. Excellent. Sebastian, do you have this? Do you have outlets that you can talk about what you're doing?
Not Not a lot. No. I'm still quite new to this. Yeah. So
oh, that's fair enough.
By the time I'll, yeah, definitely. My first, let's say, client is going to be someone from France, but we're going to speak in English. So it's going to be via Zoom.
So you're going to speak in English. Okay.
Yes. Or Romanian, but that's not going to work out.
Okay. I'm going to remind you to when you're teaching that person, but it's not going to be for a while yet, of course, but it, yes, closer than you think, that when you're teaching them in English, and they are presumably French, is that right?
No. Wherever I'm going to, you know, to teach, they were born in the United States, and they do speak English. Yeah, there is okay. No language barrier.
There is no language barrier. Okay. No. So they are born in, so you're going to teach them in English.
Yeah. And, I mean, the person speak Romanian, French and English. So.
Okay. Then find out which their mother tongue is.
The mother tongue is English.
Mother tongue is English. And you're teaching them in English.
Yeah.
Good. That's fine. I was going to say that if they were French.
No.
I'm going to say that if they were French and you're teaching them in English, then they need not to do their autogenics in English. They must do it in French because that is their mother tongue.
No, English is the mother tongue. English.
But English is their mother tongue. So yes. That is going to be fine.
Yeah, the person was born in the United States. So, you know. Yeah.
So it is. That's brilliant. Okay. Just checking.
Yeah, that, no, that's good.
Are we marketing and publicity? That's it's a thorny process. There's a whole lot here, which is really old-fashioned notes, absolutely old-fashioned notes. You will, of course, have a presence on the British Autogenic Society website, therapist directory, and there's quite a nice comprehensive form, of course, for you to fill out with anything that you want on your page up there. It's free. You can't do it yet, not until you're qualified, but that will be there. And you might create your own. There's plenty of ways of creating a website these days, isn't there? And if you have your own website, then you can put a link to it from the BAS one. So that's also, and of course you can put a link to the BAS from your own, which also gives a bit more information to people who are looking on there. And then of course the social media. I do absolutely nothing with social media, but of course you can do whatever you like with social media to put yourself about.
Mm.
So an awful lot of these notes are really old fashioned. Maybe the little things to think about.
Does Donna and Patricia, do you use websites or social media at all for autogenic?
Definitely not social media. I use the BAS website, and I have got a website which is not very good, not completed. I keep trying to get my son-in-law to do a website for me. He's very good at that sort of thing, but I kind of got I'm not techie enough to do my own. I suppose I could find out how to do it. Yeah, I mean, I do have something there, but I don't think it's very much use to me. There are a lot of things out there. You know, that for quite a reasonable price per month, they will put your information on their website as well. You know, like
yes, there's all sorts of things like that, aren't there? So it's up to you to sort of investigate and see. Thank you. That's a very good point.
Oh, like Find a Therapist website.
Sorry?
Like Find a Therapist?
Yeah. Yes. I did that for a while. It didn't bring me anything, but hey, there we go. I mean,
you sometimes get contacted. LinkedIn is a good thing to belong to as well, because you get people that are interested in you sometimes from looking at your information on LinkedIn?
Yes, I had a whole training session on LinkedIn once. And of course, the trouble is when you have a training session, it makes you realize how much you've got to do in order to make it work. And, you know, and the person said, well, you know, spend half an hour a day on it. And I thought, half an hour a day? Oh, no, I couldn't even think of it. So I never, but that's my age. You're all in a different world to me. How about you, Donna? Have you done LinkedIn?
No, Jade keeps threatening to take over my social media and build me a website and everything. But I think until Bass is finished with her, she hasn't got time or the will actually to start doing it again.
No, fair enough.
So at the moment, we've got enough on our plates really doing stuff like that. So
this is true.
But this one day true. In the future.
Right. Planning. When you've done your assessments and the decision has been made, let's go ahead, let's start your course. It's a good idea to do that then and there, because it's as long as everybody's got a diary handy. Please don't start. Well, I think if you've read these notes already, you will understand what I'm saying. Don't do what a lot of people end up doing and then wish they hadn't, by not planning a course, but you say, let's start on Monday, let's meet at 10 o'clock on Monday morning, that's great, that's week one. And they come along on Monday morning and you do week one. And then you say, right, now when are we going to meet again? Well, it should be the following Monday at 10 o'clock. Oh, no, I can't do that. I'll be away on a long weekend. I can't do that. Oh, and I can't do the following Monday either. I'll have to do that. Oh, well, we could do the Tuesday. But actually, no, sorry, the therapist, that's me. I'm busy on the Tuesday. I can't do the Tuesday. And it goes on like that. And that is really, really unsettling.
Yeah.
So always plan out the whole course. Right through the diary, find a day where consistently both of you can be available at the same time. And once you've got past the first 2 or 3 weeks, actually the diary is pretty empty, and hopefully it all depends, of course, on people's circumstances. But then you map it out straight away. If you've got the dates in the diary, it's much, much easier to manage the whole course, because if something crops up, and one of you can't manage to keep it and you've got to change it, you can do that. And there's no risk of writing something in on the day that you might be seeing the person, but actually you didn't write it in, so therefore you've arranged something different. And so then it goes very, very muddly. I've actually got a client at the moment who started in October and she still hasn't finished. I really hate working like that. Actually, the last bit is just her. No, she hasn't even. That's right. She hasn't done week 9. But the whole thing, she was cancelling me far more often than I cancelled her. And then one day I cancelled her and it was this last one, which was, you know, but it had got like that. I got pretty fed up with it. And it wasn't on the top of her agenda, which was another sort of reason I got a bit fed up with it. That's not comfortable, not a nice situation. So plan it out at the start. And also, you won't be taken by surprise if suddenly in week, end of week 4, they say, I can't come for 2 weeks now because, or 3 weeks actually, because I'm away for 2 weeks. Now, which is week 4? Which exercise is it?
Oh, sorry, I thought you were...
No, I'm talking to Bev and Sebastian. Which exercise do we do in week 4? Say it again.
I'm just saying it to me.
So could you repeat the phrase again?
Which autogenic exercise will we be doing in week 4?
Respiratory awareness.
No, that is the standard exercise four.
Okay, that's not okay. What you were asking.
Yeah, so okay, week four.
Heaviness one, heaviness two, and then we've got cardiac warmth, cardiac awareness.
Actually, no, it's short stitch in week one.
I'm confused about that. I might need to get my brain back in gear with the fact that week one is short stitch. Yeah.
Week one is short stitch. Heaviness part one is week two. I know it sounds so awful. How on earth are you supposed to remember it? But actually the sequence is short stitch, heaviness part one, heaviness part two. So in week four, it's warmth. And I've picked that one because warmth is so long and your client is now saying to you, I'm going to be away. I can't come back for 3 weeks. Okay. What would you do with that?
Give them a holding exercise.
Well done, Bev. I can't remember the last time we spoke about the holding exercise, but that's exactly what you do. However, sometimes the client will go away after the warmth exercise saying, oh, bye, see you next week. And it's later on, 3 days later or 4 days later, I'm so sorry, I completely forgotten I was going on holiday. I'm not going to be here for 3 weeks. Or I've got a business trip, I can't do it. So it gets a bit chaotic. So you need to hurriedly send them the warmth, the hold exercise at that point. You don't want to leave them on warmth for more than 1 week. That's important. Similarly, with the heartbeat exercise, that can sometimes be awkward. We don't want a gap after that. We want to move swiftly on to add in the breathing. So that's why we need to plan this course.
I'm a bit lost. What is the hold exercise?
It's it should be in with the warmth one somewhere. In it's the yellow sheet. I'll tell you what it is. It's quicker for me to tell you, Sebastian, and then you look it up. It is my right arm is heavy, and then my arms and legs are heavy and warm several times, and then my neck and shoulders are heavy and I'm at peace. It's much, much shorter than the full length warmth. I'm sorry, I'm going on at a far too long here and going in and out of this is silly. The message here is if you've got your plan when you are first meeting your client at the assessment and you've got your plan where you're going to be, you are in control. Much, much easier to make or change the appointments when you need to. Is that all right, Bev? I'm wondering if you're looking a bit puzzled.
Yeah, it's because I'm just looking in the electronic notes for the holding exercise.
Oh, right. In the yellow thing.
Yeah, I would just found it now. And the alternative short stitch exercises is on the same page.
It is.
Yeah.
And those are very good exercises when you are forced to take a break in the middle of the course. As long as they've done warmth, they're no good before you've done warmth. How are you doing, Sebastian? Can you find it?
On the patient, on the client sheet, I cannot see
it. It's right at the back, I think.
Yeah, but it's just alternative short stitch. It's not actually saying hold exercise.
Oh.
The concept of hold exercise.
Is that on the cardiac sheet then that you're looking at?
Hang on. Yes, that is on the cardiac.
Yes, okay. If you go right to the very back of those yellow sheets.
Yeah, it's not right at the back because at the back is the intentional offloading exercises.
Okay.
It's before you get to personal and motivational formula. There's a sheet and it looks like that, Sebastian.
Okay, I'll find it.
You'll find it.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Found it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Right. So I have three places in an autogenic course where taking a break is quite useful. I mean to say, if you have to take a break, that's the place. So one of them is after session three. That's when you've done heaviness part two. So you've got all heaviness there with the neck and shoulders and I'm at peace. That's quite a good place to take a break if you have to. It's not ideal. And then the other one is session four, when you would give the hold exercise.
And do you mean after session four?
I mean, yes, thank you. After session four, because after session three, of course, that's, yes. I'm not saying you would do this and stretch out the course like my current client, which has been a bit of a nuisance. Okay. So after session three is fine. After session four, because you put the hold exercise. And another good place is after session six, which is when we've got respiration. And once we've got respiration marrying up with the cardiac, that too can be a really good place. Sometimes we need a bit of consolidation or something like that.
And just to clarify, when we're talking about session three, four, six, and so on, session one is priming plus explaining all about the training environment and the postures.
Everything.
That's what you class as session one. The assessment is outside of this.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, quite right. Okay. The assessment is always completely separate. We don't begin anything at assessment.
Yeah.
It's a big mistake to do that. It's tempting sometimes because someone's very keen and they say, oh, I can't wait to start this. Ooh, have you got time now? You know, and no, don't do that. The assessment is actually a standalone. It's a really good space to reflect on the conversation, perhaps understanding a bit more about natural processing, which nobody's ever thought about before. Maybe the conversation might have had a bit of emotional content with it. The client needs a bit of space just to stay with that for a bit.
So it's 9 sessions, but 11 meetings.
That's right. The first meeting is the assessment.
Yeah.
Then we've got the 9 weekly sessions, and then we've got the refresher at the other end.
Yeah.
Have you got any comments, Patricia and Donna? No, no, okay. I wonder if we've covered this session in slightly different ways to what we thought about. The final thoughts on these notes, of course, are take care of yourself, use your AT regularly, and practice what you preach. Woo! Do I practice what I preach? Yeah, on the whole, it's a question of adapting, isn't it, what we're doing. I'm going to send you Luther's notes on the consternation theory. I have found them. So I will scan a very old-fashioned printing. Okay. The homeostasis theory. Oh, there's quite a lot here. It's not only the constellation theory, but the constellation theory is at the front.
I have a vague memory of Nida once talking about something she'd recently attended. This is years ago. And it was about family constellation.
That's different.
Is that completely different?
Completely different, because it's all about families.
Yeah.
Yes. And fascinating stuff it is, but it's not ours. It's not autogenic.
I think this is what was confusing me.
Yes.
I was thinking, because I didn't know very much about either of them. So that those Luther's notes will be interesting for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I'm going to send you some articles as well.
That would be great, Jane. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Now, where are we? Donna, over to you.
I'm wondering if there are any questions from Pierre or Sebastian. about the whole of the day, really. Have we? Because I think we've finished that section, have we?
I think we have.
We've gone through most of it, haven't we? And sleep and the dream formula we've done.
What we haven't actually discussed is equality and diversity, but I can't believe that in the other areas of work that we're all involved in various ways, that nobody has come across that before. So I think we take it as read. What I'm also saying is that we wouldn't, a person is a person. That's the whole of autogenic training, isn't it?
Yeah.
So everybody is equal. Of course they are. And we know that. So it isn't ever a question of exclusion or anything. Although what we should and we will be talking about at some stage is how you might help someone in a minority, such as a deaf person.
Mm.
Or, you know, what? How are you going to manage that? We won't talk about that now. We've done, I think, quite enough for one day. But so there are things to consider. And yes, if you did have to see somebody in a wheelchair, I couldn't get a wheelchair into my house, actually. So that's when I would offer a visit to their home. And that can be full of problems because you have dogs and children and other people's phones and other things going on in their house. So, but it's possible if you have to. Anyway, we'll leave that one outside. Otherwise, yes. Sorry, Donna. Yes, what were you going to go on? Yes.
I can't remember now. I'm sorry.
Questions. No, I think we're all a bit.
Yeah.
I know when I've been reading through the notes, I have been writing down some questions. I'll just see if any are relevant. Yeah, and I might be able to answer this one myself, but I'll just run it by. Is what's the difference between the term autogenic therapy and autogenic training? Because sometimes it feels like they're used interchangeably. Is therapy like the generic term that covers the neutralization and the creativity mobilization technique or something? I don't know. I just know the words. I don't know anything about those things. And autogenic training is what we're learning here.
You have answered it. That's exactly right. In the old days, we called it autogenic therapy in an effort to make it recognized as a therapy, a form of treatment.
Yeah.
Whereas autogenic training might not have conveyed that, and that therefore it wasn't too serious, but it made absolutely no difference. And that when people will say, well, there's always aromatherapy, well, we're thinking, well, yes, autogenic therapy, then perhaps we should do it. But actually, I began certainly in my own practice just to refer to it as autogenic training. It is a therapeutic method, there's no doubt about that. We all know that. But autogenic training actually conveys the idea that it is a bit of a technique, which it indeed it is, a technique with therapeutic benefits. And I think on the whole, autogenic training for me now is my go-to name for it. It's slightly, I slightly grate a little bit when I hear people referring to autogenic therapy when they are actually going to be talking about autogenic training. And so the one of the components of autogenic therapy, yes, is autogenic training. And then the other components are the ones you've listed there, the creativity and meditative exercises, neutralization. Those are different components under the umbrella.
And what about using the term autogenics? Because I've heard that sometimes used. Is that like the in vogue word, the shortened version for it?
Well, I'll tell you something. Anne hates that. She really does hate it. She wants to have the full autogenic training. Yeah. I will always refer to autogenic training for anybody who doesn't know about it.
Yeah.
But I loosely use autogenics. I don't know about you, Donna and Patricia. I loosely use autogenics when I'm talking to someone who already knows it's autogenic training. And yes, well, in this autogenics course, we do this and that and the other. And it's a kind of loose term, but it isn't its full name. What do you say, Patricia?
You made me remember. I use it when I'm talking to someone who knows.
Exactly.
It's just the laziness of saying, rather than say the whole thing.
Laziness, you said it. It is, yes.
Yeah, AT is a good one as well.
Yes, AT as it's, yes. Yeah. Although there's also...
I can use that as well. I think some of my clients like that when they've... I've done my AT.
Yes, yes. You just need to make sure it doesn't get muddled up with the Alexander technique.
So that means the autogenics is like the slang version.
Yeah, it is a bit. It is, but just between people who know.
Yeah, in the in-house.
Yeah, in-house, exactly. Yeah. I love these questions, actually. These are important ones for you because you need to know the context for them and so on.
We've not really, unless I've missed it, gone through the checklists, have we, in any detail?
You're right. Things like the contraindications, are you thinking about that?
Yeah, and also, is that called the car sheet? What's called?
Now, okay, that checklist. Yes.
And something else. I know there's these abbreviations. I think, did I write them down somewhere? Let me just have a nosy.
You're very clever if you have written them down. I can never remember what I know. MIMOP stands for Measure Your Own... Measure Your Own... I can't think what the P is. Oh, isn't that silly?
Personality?
Sorry?
Personality problems.
Yeah, I did write them down somewhere because they kept coming across them and I had no idea what they were referring to, but I've got to find them somewhere.
I can find them quite quickly, I hope, on here. I was going to get a bit of paper out, but let's have a look.
Yeah.
HADS, Hospital Anxiety Depression Scale Questionnaire, and the MIMOP, Measure Yourself Medical Outcome Profile. I knew I'd written them down.
That's somewhere. It, profile. Well done. Medical out. Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Measure your medical. That's interesting.
Measure Yourself Medical Outcome Profile.
Ah, right. Got it. Yes. Okay. Yes, well, we could run through them. Has anybody got the energy to do that now?
Oh. If this is the best place to put it in, you know, would there be any time tomorrow?
I think we'll be quite pushed tomorrow. We're starting straight away with the new exercise, the forehead, then personal and motivational, and then coffee. Only half an hour on personal motivation. Okay.
Yes. I'm just thinking, like, I don't mind doing it now, but Pia might benefit from it. She's got the recording, obviously, that we're doing now.
What are you thinking, Donna? We could run through them quite quickly, easily in half an hour now.
Mm-hmm. How are you with that, Sebastian, with time?
I don't mind it, that's fine, but could I know where do I find this question? Like, where exactly, in what sections?
I'm just having a look, see if I can find them.
Please.
So one of them is in the yellow section and it's called the CAR sheet, the C-A-R sheet.
Is at the end, yeah?
At the end, yeah.
Let's have a look. I don't know if that's the last one. No, the last one is the autogenic therapy anxiety inventory. And the one before that is the anger aggression inventory.
There's two sorts. Okay, no. Leave that for the moment.
Yeah, the CAR sheet is towards the back, but not quite at the back in the yellow client sheets. And that's a 3-page document if you're able to find that, Sebastian.
That is the one of the control.
It's the anxiety.
Anxiety inventory. I've put it in with the anxiety exercise. You might want to do that. But let's look at the car sheet. It'll take you 2 minutes. 2 minutes on the car sheet?
Yep.
Have you found it? It's called, Sebastian, it's called Checklist for Autogenic Reactions.
Second,
C for checklist, A for...
Checklist, A for autogenic reaction, yeah.
A reaction. So we call it car sheet, C-A-R for short.
That's okay, that's why I just skip it, okay, because I wasn't familiar with the abbreviation, okay.
I appreciate that. Oh, hang on. Right, this is, I believe, instead of a diary. I'm very bad at using it myself. I will say very quickly, if people are not keeping a diary and you would really like to know more about what they're experiencing in their exercises, then this is a sheet to give them.
I give them, all my clients, that car sheet because whether they want, you know, well, maybe not on in the beginning, but if they're not keeping a diary, and ask them if they're, you know, could look at this sheet every so often, it will prompt their memories about things they've forgotten that they've experienced.
That's a very good use for it. It really is. And I do give it out sometimes. I think one of the drawbacks is that there are so many things on there, people get a bit confused and think, oh, am I supposed to feel all these things? You know, and so it can get a bit like that.
No, but
a bit like suggesting symptoms to people.
Yes.
Then you might spot something that you have experienced yourself. And yes. I don't expect them to, look at it all necessarily.
And I think actually it's particularly useful for the sort of person who tells you all the time that it's fine. And that's the only information you ever get out of them.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yes, it's fine. No, I'm not noticing anything. It's
like
fine.
What fine is, wouldn't we? That's the thing.
Yes, but even then, when you say, so what's fine? Well, you know, it's just relaxed. And they're not doing it. So anyway, so that is quite useful. So that's all we need to say about it, except that some of these are supposedly sectioned out for which of these symptoms might mean that they need to do intentional offloading.
Yeah.
And section one actually has quite a lot of symptoms which are very like the crying need symptoms, which you've got attached to the crying. So if you saw that every single week they had frontal headaches, then that's an indicator for crying exercises.
And what would section two be then? Would that be like the anger?
Well, you see, this is interesting. It could be certainly about, but it's also about crying needs. There's plenty in there. So this is where it gets confusing. This is where I don't want you as new therapists thinking, oh, well, if it's session two, I better give them this or that. Because it actually doesn't work like that. You're just going to sort of take things at face value almost. Look at session four, increasingly apprehensive. I'm not sure what I would say to that if it was only addressing offloading.
The anxiety. Let's see.
Well, you would, wouldn't you, because of apprehension. But we can have anxiety as a crying need symptom and as an anger symptom. Mm. Because so many of these things interweave with each other.
I think for the beginning, we should keep things as simple as possible. By the time we get more experience, then, I mean, personally, I would consider.
I very much appreciate what you've just said, Sebastian. I think that's perhaps why I don't really use this very much. For the occasional client where I'm not getting enough information and I'm sure there must be something going on, if only they realised, then that's a good way to do it. But I wouldn't, then say, oh, if it's section five, oh, let's do something else. But you're quite right, though, Patricia, it's quite likely that anybody would have experienced one or two of these things at some point or another. And then that opens their eyes a little bit and different ways of looking at it. I think that's really the use for this. What about you, Donna? Anything to add there?
No, I was just very intrigued now as to what the section 1, 2, 3, etc. are for, because I'd never thought of it like that. I don't give it out all the time. Very rarely do I give it out. Sometimes I've floated it around and brought it back in, so they sort of have a look but don't have it to study. But also I have given it to people, like you say, that are fine, or nothing to report, because it just, you know, can I just go through that? I've got a list here. Can I just perhaps go through it? And I've kept it.
Uh-huh.
I've just read it out and just sort of put a bit of a tick. But yeah, I don't use it as a matter of course, because I think it is quite overwhelming.
It could be exactly.
And frightening, actually, when you look at some of them and think, oh my God, I don't want to go spinning.
Yeah, no, exactly. Or I'm feeling as though I'm going to die.
Yes.
Although people can have those sorts of reactions, yes. But, you know, how much do we want to worry? Would it worry them? And so I think, you know, you're going to be quite considered, I think, perhaps, before handing this out. Mm. But it does have its place at times. I think I like your idea of just handing it round, have a look, and then taking it back in again. Mm. That's a nice idea. And section 7. Have a look at this. Tell me what this is about. Slack jaw, increased salivation, slower rate of breathing, maybe a slower heart rate, feeling at ease.
Training symptoms.
Training symptoms. She's got it in one. Well done. Sleeping better, increased dreaming. So these are all the kind of the niceties of improvement, which again might be very useful for the client to discover if they hadn't realised it already. So that's the CAR sheet, the checklist for autogenic reactions. Okay. So where did we find the HADS? I think I've got that somewhere. It's session 1, I think. No, I can't remember where I put it in here. In my own sheets at home, ready to start teaching. Now, the only thing with the HADS, it stands for Hospital Anxiety and Depression Scale. And what we can't do is use it in published material, because each of those questionnaires costs £1. So if you're wanting to do a survey on 1,000 people, it's going to cost you £1,000. So we tend not to use that, but it is a useful one, actually.
Is that a form for people in hospital then, to see how much depression?
Actually, it's just given the name, the hospital, I think just for its validity. It is used in hospitals, or it's used in psychiatric departments or whatever. So it's given that name, Hospital Anxiety and Depression Scale. But I think it just means that it's a scale that hospitals use, but I don't think it's used, maybe in psychiatric units, yes.
And do we have a copy of that form in our in our binder?
I'm pretty sure it's there somewhere. I'm sorry, I can't. It's not in the green section, no. So it's not in the yellow section. Bev, you've been through this with a fine tooth comb. Already.
Yeah, I'd have to have a nosy.
Yeah. I can send it to you, certainly. We haven't got these out yet then, have we? MIMOP, HADS, and I'll send them to you.
Do you know, the reason I think I'm perhaps more familiar with them is because I think I certainly used one, I think, during my own training.
Yeah, you probably did. You might well have done.
Yeah, maybe.
And it is useful to have a little measuring thing. The only measuring thing we've used as yet is a qualitative one, pre-course self-assessment, where we would write it in week one and then fold it up in an envelope and seal it up and open it out at the end when you've written another one. And we've got the two to compare. So, yeah. But that's very personal, and it's not used for any kind of statistics or anything like that. At the hospital, they like us to use the MIMOP, which is what we just said, measure your medical outcome profile. Have I got that right now? I think I have. And so it's a list of symptoms and the scale of 1 to 6 or something that you might be suffering. Not a list of symptoms, it's a couple of prominent symptoms. And then later on, we make a note of what their old scores were. No, we don't. We make a note of the symptoms they wrote down previously, and we see if the scores have changed. So that's bringing out some quite nice results.
I filled one of those in. So I've just found a photocopy of the second one I filled in. Yes.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know, we haven't had a tea break and it's 4:30. And I'm thinking, have we had enough for one day?
Yeah, I guess my only question is, so regarding checklists and forms, you know, what's the guidance from you guys about what we should use?
You can tell perhaps that I'm not going to say that it's not about you have to use any. Yes, it's quite a good idea to have an audit. It is a good idea. There is another form which is called the Cyclops, which is an interesting name. It's not the Cyclops monster with one eye or whatever it was called, the Greek mythology. It's a PSYCHLOPS. So it's a psychological questionnaire. You can Google that, actually. And that's another one for measuring outcomes. I've used it, I think, only a couple of times. There's something about it I don't quite like, but it is a very well used, and it's free to measure things. Have you used that one, Donna?
I've heard of it. I can't call it to mind at the moment.
No.
I'm not sure MIMOPS is free. I think you need a license to use that.
Do you need... Okay, so the hospital's got that license,
yeah,
but we wouldn't have it.
I don't think we can give those forms out for people to use.
No, that's fair
enough.
That
was something on the list that Linda and I were going to look into, measuring tools as part of the research.
Aha.
As you know, that started and stopped very quickly. So it's on a list again with things to do.
Yes.
But I don't tend to measure any. I mean, obviously I do at the hospital, and it would be nice to get something that we can to use for research for autogenics, but when I see my private clients, I don't actually use a measuring thing, really, just what's on the assessment form.
If I use one, I like to use it because the clients will be interested. I like the clients to see if they've moved on. Mm. And the HADs can do that, and as long as we're not going to publish it and so on, then there's no reason why we shouldn't use it. It's only bits of paper. Mm. There is a way of scoring it and so on. You need to understand that, so we can spend a bit more time on that another time if you like. Or would you like to do it now? Can I email it to you in time?
Yeah,
we could. If we haven't got time to write, try and tidy it up a bit more and do it in the next module.
That's another thing, of course. Yes.
So that you're all ready to go when you're ready to go. Instead of fogging everything down at the moment with.
The HADS form, I think, is useful when you have a new client. But I was working somewhere doing counselling, and I had to ask my clients to fill out a HADS form every single week. And they.
Oh!
Yeah, yeah, and they really didn't like it.
No.
Pressure was put on me to make sure that I got them every week from the clients. And I have used Cyclops myself, but not for a long time. And I can't even completely remember what Cyclops is like, but I remember thinking it was quite good. Yeah.
Okay. I probably haven't used that enough. Now, I can email you a HADS form. I've just found it. So I will put that in now. Whoops, I need my keyboard. Now it says JB version, and it's because there is one question which I altered very slightly because it didn't make sense for our purposes. Okay, so so that's why it says JB version. Okay, it's coming over to you now. Oh, I haven't put a subject in. Hang on. Right. Okay.
Be back in 2 seconds.
Anything arrived yet?
No.
Ooh.
Strange.
Let me just check it's in my sent box. I thought I did just now. I thought it was, but did I not look properly? Yes, it is there. Yeah.
Yes, okay. Thank you. I've yeah. Got it.
I'm just going to get a paper one. Okay, do you want to run through this? Have you opened it up all right?
Yes, we may. Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Okay. I will send you another version with how to score it. But what is happening here is that there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There are 14 questions with a possible 4 answers for each one. And there are 7 questions on anxiety and 7 questions on depression. And you can't tell, or you might do by the way the questions are asked, but you don't know which is which. So I give this out to the person when they've come to week one, before we start doing anything, and ask them to fill it out. So
I've received it now. It's here at last.
Oh, you've got it. Sorry. Yes. And there are 7 questions on anxiety. Right. Now, the thing is scored with 0 at best and 3 at worst. So it goes from 0, 1, 2 and 3. So, for example, in I feel tense and wound up at the top, it's most of the time. You would actually score 3 for that. So you'd write that in the coloured box when you're scoring it. They are filling it in on the white side. But if they never felt like that, it would be 0 in the score box. Okay. So all of them are scored like that, but actually you can't tell which is, it doesn't give you any, suppose not to give anything away. On the top right, I feel, now this is the question I altered because it used to say, I feel as if I'm slow. I can't remember what the original question was. And a lot of, that's supposed to be a depressed question, but people were answering it very positively because autogenics had helped them so much. They were really slowed down. So actually I've changed the question. I feel as if I'm slowed down and can't function well. That matches up with what it's supposed to be, a sort of depressive kind of question. So if we were ever publishing these, which we wouldn't, you wouldn't use this variation of this. Anyway, that's how you do it. It means that someone who is very, very, very severely afflicted with either depression or anxiety, if they got the top score, it would be 21. So 21 is considered pretty bad and somebody's perhaps shouldn't be learning autogenics because it could get worse before it gets better, or perhaps they need psychological help before they come for AT. But I have taught people with scores of anxiety up in the 15, 16, 17s, and they've done really well with AT. I give it to them again in the last session, and very often the scores, if they've been that high, they've come down quite considerably, which is brilliant. On the whole, I find that depression doesn't really feature. It's funny, autogenic training will, shall I say, treat or help anxiety, but usually people who come for autogenic training aren't that depressed to start with. So there isn't usually a big change in that particular, in that score. So very rare for anybody to have the Fools 21, and you would be worried if they did. So it's more likely people are going to start with a score of, I don't know, 12 or 13 would be a sort of anxiety states that are troubling their lives, and they want to they wouldn't know what they're answering on here. You just give them this piece of paper, see what happens. You know that the anxiety questions are the first one on the top left hand corner. I get a sort of frightened feeling. That's obviously going to be an anxiety one. I can laugh and see the funny side. No, that's about a depression one. So that's how they are mixed up. Worrying thoughts go through my mind. That's anxiety. I can sit at ease and feel relaxed. So something that's very cleverly asked as well. Sometimes they're quite positive statements. And then the answer is, well, no, I can't do that. So that's quite a, that would be a score of 3. So that's what this one is about. Give it to them again at the end of the course. Give it to them a third time when they come back for a refresher. And it can very often show some really good results.
That makes sense to me. Certainly not what I was asked to do. I mean, to me, it was crazy, but...
Well, I mean, we can all see it's crazy. And why is it crazy? Because this poor person is having to look at and measure all the bad things in their life every week. That doesn't make any sense.
They said it was something to do with the funding that they got to run the centre, that they had to show what we were doing, that we were seeing all these clients. That was their reason for us doing it.
But not every week. That is so unintelligent.
Every time I saw a client, I had to, every single week, I had to ask them to do the form.
And was the expectation that the score should be coming down each week?
No, I mean, they never discussed this with us. Just was, make sure you've got, put your hats in, or have you done your hat, put them, you know, and they were all recorded. And I don't know what they did with them, but, you know, they obviously sent the information off somewhere to wherever they had to.
But whoever is judging it, do they realise that actually through a process like this, whether it's counselling or autogenics or anything else of this kind of nature, you're going to get ups and downs in those according to what's going on in any individual week?
I mean, the thing is, I would know what was going on in that person's life. I mean, there might have been a bereavement in the family or something. So that explained to me why something changed dramatically. Mm. But there was no way to explain that. Yeah. I found them ridiculous. So the poor people who had to do them, it must have been awful for them. I mean, they were all very kind and didn't complain to me about it. You know, I could tell they hated it.
Yeah. I mean, oh, not that old thing again. I couldn't do it last week. I've got to do it again now. Yes. Yes, I mean, it can go overboard, this sort of stuff. It really can. So that's not very helpful. So that's the HADS one, and it is quite a nice one. Yeah. So we've done checklist, we've done the HADS, we haven't looked at the MIMOC, we have a sort of idea of what it is, but we can't use it outside the hospital. Donna is saying, which I couldn't remember whether we could or not, so thank you.
Yeah, I just had a quick look and it's saying something about a license fee you have to contact them. And I do remember Judith saying, are we going to renew it for the students? And I thought, well, what's the point in training them to use something that they can't then use outside? No, it's just pointless.
So the Cyclops would be the only other one to be looking at. So perhaps you and I should do that as our homework, Donna, before next time, and see what our opinion is on it. Okay. Those are measuring tools, apart from the checklist, which is actually a pseudo diary. Is that all right, Bev? Would that be the right way to put it? Okay.
And then the other ones, the inventories for anger and aggression.
Yep.
Those are, can be given out when the intentional offloading exercises are being introduced or not.
They can be. Personally, I don't use them. Yeah. I think it's yet another form for people to worry about. So I don't really. But you can see what they are. And they are very, well, there are two sorts. Have you found the Luther ones in the red section and in the old fashioned typing? They are all Luther's notes on the offloading. And I'm afraid I didn't put the inventories in the right place. I didn't realize that that hadn't happened. So that was my fault. And then there are the other inventories, which are a bit simpler, in the yellow sheets.
Yeah, I haven't seen the inventories in the Luther notes in the pink section. It might be that I'm going through so too quickly. But I can't see a form, put it that way. It might be they're written in a different...
Well, there's a couple of blank pages where it says, please insert the inventories. Now, I think on those notes, page 42 is one of them, where it's a blank page and it says insert pro-homeostatic anxiety control inventory. And if they were not...
Nothing in there.
Yeah. What I did was, certainly for Pia, I sent those inventories by email in the red section. I can't remember if you've got this whole manual electronically or not.
We have.
You have. So you might find them in there. So look in the red section
Brilliant. Thank you.
You found them. Okay. Yeah. And they are ones marked Luther notes, I think. So if you print those off and you can put them into the relevant pages, then that will be sorted out.
Brilliant. Thank you for that, okay. Jane.
Yes. No, I'm sorry. That should have been done before. And the other thing, of course, about it is it's yet another form. I don't know about you, Donna. I don't really use the inventories.
I don't. I had one lady yesterday who said, I've made a list. And so if they want to make a list, they'll make a list.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think the instructions on the notes we give out say, you know, you can make a list and just surprise yourself how many people you might be angry or niggled with or whatever it is. Yeah. And then Luther played with that list and made it, we've got to fill the box in for how many times it happens. So if it's three times a day, you multiply that by the number of days in the month. And so you've got the figure 90 to put in there. So he was very keen to make it a mathematical exercise. And from that point of view, I think our poor clients, I'm just not going to do that to them. Although when the inventory is referred to and then I'm asked about it, very occasionally, this is no criticism of our other genders, Sebastian, but it's usually the men with the analytical minds who want to have that form and to, so I give it to them and I explain it and I say, do have a go at it, but they never do it.
Mm.
So they are an optional extra and they're quite interesting and they are supposed to show that whatever high score you've got about your anger activation, you can bring it down by doing offloading. That's the whole point. those inventories. So as long as you know they exist, that's enough. Don't worry, you won't have a test on them.
Definitely, we're going to ask for clarification at the right point, sorry, at the right moment, if be the case.
If it's the case, yes, if you have a client or you think, do you think this might help? We could talk about it, of course. Something like that. Yes. Don't worry about it now. Absolutely not. We're just having a conversation about it now. What is an inventory anyway? All too technical, isn't it? It's a bit too much.
It sounds like stock taking to me.
Yes, absolutely. Well, actually, that is quite a good analogy because we do have that word, we take stock, don't we? When we're just looking at things. And so we're taking stock of how much anger there might be in our lives and so on and so on. That's quite useful. Yeah. Right. I think we should close our afternoon and leave you with your solar plexus exercise to do a couple of times tonight or in bed or if you're staying awake for it. Yes.
And Jane, sorry to interrupt. I would like to know tomorrow, when are we going to sit the test? It'll be the first thing we're going to do in the morning or it'll be midday?
No, I did send you the new timetable, didn't I? I hope you've got that. That's fine. I'll answer your question, of course. We're going to do it at 11:30 at the moment.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, we've got one or two things that you might need in the test, so we can't give you the answer. We can't give you the test too early.
Oh. Okay.
That's why it couldn't be today, because we haven't, you know, I can't remember what the questions are now. It doesn't matter. But just in case there was something that we hadn't covered, that it would be unfair to give you the test too early.
Sorry, did you say 11:30, Joan?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Any remarks to make about that, Donna?
The test?
About how we're going to do it?
We're going to email it over to you, I believe, just before you start, obviously, so you've got it. And then you'll send it back to us an hour later. Is it an hour?
Yes, it is supposed to be an hour, but it is also, we're supposed to be marking it over the next half hour. And it is, I want to do it as well. I'm glad it's coming because I've done it with pen and paper before and I want to do this and just see what it's like to do because we should do our own. So I'm going to be joining you. It's going to be a Word document, is it? So we just type on it.
As far as I know, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah. And I think there was mention of a timer as well. So you'll have a time there as well. So you don't have to keep looking at other things. You can just, it will be on the screen. So you know
it'll
where
it will be on the screen. Okay. Yes. Right. Well, we'll find out what all of that is like. Okay. Is there any leeway for adding on another 15 minutes? Suppose everybody is sort of finding an hour is too short.
I'm pretty sure we can set it to whatever you want it to be, really.
Well, I see.
Maybe we can ask Jade in a minute.
Okay. We'll do that. But my question is really that if we get to an hour and people are still floundering and want to complete, but that time is up, it's actually at that point, can we give it another 15 minutes? That would be my question.
I'm sure we can, because I think it's going to be up to them to send it back anyway.
Yeah, okay. Oh, well, that's another thing, of course. Oh, yes. That'll be fine. Thank you. Then we're all going home knowing how that's going to be.
But I think the key is not to panic. It's not going to be terrible.
It's easy to say that, isn't it, when we're not going to do it?
I know, because I remember being with Patricia going, oh my God, I don't know. panic.
Well, we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a test. Somebody says the word test and you just immediately think, oh no, I don't know anything. But you do.
You do.
You do know it.
So much is going to be there. And even if it isn't all quite straightened out, it doesn't matter. That's why we're in the middle of training. We're going to be working on it if we need to. So it's going to be fine. Yeah.
It will just show us what we haven't taught properly.
Absolutely. It works on all fronts.
Definitely.
And then we've got Anne again at 2 o'clock. That's going to be a lovely, a lovely moment when everything else is behind us.
Yes.
And a personal and motivational formula. We will talk about it. It would be lovely if you could read those notes today. Or sometime before 10:30 tomorrow. Okay. Right. Are we going to say goodbye?
Jane, if this has a new itinerary in printed for tomorrow, because this one I've got says that there's something else at 11:30 tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I've changed it. Because of, I can't remember why we changed it now. It wasn't because of Pia.
No, it was, I think it was because everyone was getting a bit anxious and it would be nice to get it out of the
Yes, party. We changed it to lift it up out of the end of Sunday.
Yeah. So we
and put it. and put it earlier in the day so we could at least have something to do afterwards.
Yeah. Okay, so, right.
So we've got 9:30. You have got it. Which I share in your emails because I sent it to everybody. What was it, about a week ago? Group session 8 isn't 9:30. 10:30 is personal and motivational formulae. 11 o'clock is coffee. We could start the test a little bit early, of course, I suppose. 11:30 is the test. Lunch, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and central nervous system. 3 o'clock, group session 9. This is the final session of an AT course. And thank you, because the questionnaires are very useful that we've talked about today. That's what we can be doing tomorrow during our group session 9. And then it's tea. And then it's where we go from there. You want me to send you the timetable again, Patricia? I can do that.
No, if you sent it, Jane, you sent it. I printed everything off.
Yeah, I was just.
But I don't worry. I'll be here, and I'll just. It must be somewhere.
Anyway, I haven't received it. I just went.
You haven't?
No.
Oh.
So I just checked my.
Anyway. I do apologise. Well, I mean, I'm sure I did. But then if I made a terrible mistake, I do apologise. So let's have a look. It was in the last week or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've got it. Maybe you only just sent it to me, though. Now I'm wondering. I don't know.
When did I send it to you?
I've got it, Jane.
Then you have. Okay. And I'm just looking. And you've got it as well, Bev. I'm just looking. I've just put your name into search to see where I can find the attachments.
What? When was it sent on that thing you've
got? Well, this is what we've got. Yeah.
Draft agenda. Oh, no, that's...
No, that's for the meeting.
Yeah, sorry. I've got so many emails from you, Jane.
I know. It's getting very difficult. I've just found your question about part-time student status, Bev, as well. I must do that.
Oh, yes, that would be great. Thank you. Yeah. Timetable for module... No, that's 17th of March, isn't it?
Oh, that would be that. Yes, that's our first one.
Yeah.
Was it sent like this week or not? Because this
I
week...
think it was this week. I'm just having a look. No, that was Wednesday. I think it was before Wednesday.
No, I just have so two emails from you on Wednesday and then another one on Thursday. That's all. And
right, revised timetable. You sent that to all of us on the 7th of April.
The 7th of April. Oh, not this week.
Oh, it was before. Okay. 7th?
I'm just opening it.
That was Good Friday.
Yeah, the email's called Some Thoughts About Your Zoom Practice. It's the one where you gave us two documents, didn't you?
Oh, goodness me. I should have put that.
Table and then but the student practice information.
I'm really sorry, folks. I should have put timetable in the subject because I was scooting past that one.
Yeah.
You're quite right. And it was on the 7th of April. I'm absolutely amazed. I thought it was much more recent. I apologize profusely. Right. Can you see then it's timetable module 1, unit 3, which is this weekend, alterations.
I don't think I have that email.
So the email is called, I've come out of it now.
I've got it.
I'm just going to forward it if that's okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Send it around.
Yeah, it's called, the title of the email, Sebastian, is called Some Thoughts About Your Zoom.
Okay, I found it.
You found it.
Yeah, and it's just Happy Easter. No, is that all? Yeah.
Sorry.
It's on timetable, I think. Let's see what. So, but it was sent on the 7th of April. So, you
yes,
know,
it
I
was.
Thought it was going to be sent this week. I
that
thought
certainly it wasn't this week. I do apologize for
okay,
that.
Okay, okay, yeah, yeah, I found it. Okay, yeah, thank you.
That's entirely my fault. Okay, there's so much going on. It's really hard to keep tabs on when things were done. So I apologize. So you've got it now. You've got
yes, thank you.
I've got it as well.
Excellent. So it's the last two pages. I've sent you the whole timetable, but
yeah,
it's just the last two pages.
Okay.
Thank you very much for
my
helping
pleasure.
Me.
Okay. And thank you for being so what's the word? Well, good student, assiduous, that's the word. If you know that word in English, Sebastian, assiduous is someone who is really careful to take great care with the tasks, looking at the detail, asking the questions. You are all assiduous.
Thank you.
Right. And Pia's going to join us again tomorrow.
Yes. Okay.
I think we've had enough. You need to go away and do some AT.
Mm-hmm.